Now we have in chapter 3 then, and I'm moving right along here, we have the era of the judges. And we find in chapter 3 that the children of Israel have intermarried with the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites and the Electrolytes. Believe me, they've married into all the tribes, and God had forbidden it. Verse 1, now these are the nations which the Lord left to prove Israel, by them even as many of Israel as had not known all the wars of Canaan, only that the generations of the children of Israel might know to teach them war, at the least such as before they knew nothing thereof. And now they're given here, the five lords of the Philistines, the Canaanites, the Sidonians, and the Hivites. And we'll find as we proceed through the Bible, the Old Testament, these enemies will occur again and again, and they were indeed a thorn in the flesh of the nation Israel. Now you have actually the first apostasy now, and will you notice it? Verse 5, the children of Israel dwelt among the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, Jebusites. Verse 6, and they took their daughters to be their wives, gave their daughters to their sons, and served their gods. And the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, forgot the Lord their God, and served Balaam and the groves. Therefore the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he sold them into slavery. Now, who was the first judge? Verse 9, and when the children of Israel cried unto the Lord raised up a deliverer to the children of Israel, who delivered them, even Othniel, the son of Kenaz, Caleb's younger brother. Now, if he hadn't been a younger brother, you see, of Caleb, married his daughter, you'd have never heard of Othniel. But notice, now God will use him. And the Spirit of the Lord came upon him, and he judged Israel, and went out to war. And the enemy was delivered in his hands, and the land had rest 40 years, and Othniel, the son of Kenaz, died. Now here is your first judge. He's one of the better judges. I think probably the best judge that they had. And what is the criticism of him? Well, no great criticism. The only thing is, he was not capable in himself. He did not become the leader because of his outstanding ability, but because of who he was, the younger brother of Caleb, and also married his daughter. So Othniel is the first judge. And it's amazing what kind of men that God will use. Maybe it's the reason he'll use you and me. This book will certainly encourage you, friends. All of these judges are little men. There's not a big one actually in the lot. And these men were used of God because actually they were, well, I have to say it, they were characters, odd characters, by the way. And the very oddness caused God to use them. And he was unable to use them because of that. Now, Othniel belonged to a good family. In fact, the best of the lot, by the way. Actually, Caleb, I feel, was one of the great men that you could put along with Moses and with Joshua. I'm sure of that. And we have already, of course, seen his story. But now he had good antecedents. He came from a very fine family. Here he occupied this position. And then we find that the Lord actually called him, as we saw. And not only that, but the Spirit of the Lord came upon him, we're told here in verse 10. The Spirit of the Lord came upon him, and he judged Israel. This man had a lot going for him. There was no glamour connected, though, with him. Nothing spectacular. It just says here, and the land had rest 40 years, and Othniel, the son of Kenaz, died. That's all it said about him, by the way. Most biographies are very much like that. They have a difficulty. I met a man on the streets of Los Angeles many years ago who wrote, by the way, several fine biographies of Christian leaders of the past. And he was writing on a present-day Christian leader. And I was asking him how he was getting along. He said, I'm having difficulty. I said, what is it? Well, he says to keep the front page from rubbing against the back page. He says there's nothing to say about it. And it's very difficult to keep the birth and death apart. I think most tombstones have it accurately. Here lies Joe Doakes, born, died. That's his story. I heard of this being on the tombstone of a dentist. It said, given his name, a dentist, filling his last cavity. Well, that's about all you can say about not only dentists, but the rest of us. But you notice God came upon the simple life of this man, and that is something that is very much worthwhile. And we find that here you have an ordinary man. His only claim to greatness is he's relative of Caleb. Now we come to another man here at verse 12, and let me begin reading. The children of Israel did evil again in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord strengthened Eglon, the king of Moab, against Israel, because they had done evil in the sight of the Lord. And here goes our hoop rolling down through history again. They were serving God, then they did evil and forsook God. God delivered them into servitude. And what happened? Verse 14, the children of Israel serve Eglon, the king of Moab, 18 years. Now notice, but when the children of Israel cried unto the Lord, here we go again, we're starting up now on the hoop. They cried unto the Lord. What happened? The Lord raised up a deliverer. Who is he? Ehud, the son of Gera, a Benjamite, a man left-handed. Now, this is a good one for you, friends. The only thing this man had that was going for him, he was a southpaw. He was left-handed. He might have been a good pitcher today on one of the major league teams. But in that day, they didn't have major league teams. And he was a man left-handed. And by him, the children of Israel sent a present unto Eglon, the king of Moab. Now, I want you to see this here. It's a brutal thing that took place, and I offer no explanation for it. This man here, his actual name means red hair. He's a red-headed, left-handed fella. And the act that he performed, it lacks the heroic or the romantic. In fact, a hero doesn't become a hero like it did here. Well, here's the story. He was to go over and take a present to Eglon, the king of Moab. But Ehud made him a dagger, which had two edges of a cubit length, and he did gird it upon his raiment, upon his right thigh. Now, don't miss that. You see, he's left-handed. He'd reach over on his right side to pull out that dagger, you see. Well, in that day, when they searched anybody, they just looked on the left side because everybody was right-handed. I mean, very few people left-handed. And so when they search him, and notice what happens here when they did, he brought the present unto Eglon, king of Moab, and Eglon was a very fat man. Here's a big fat king now. And when he had made an end to offer the present, he sent away the people that bear the present. But he himself turned again from the quarries that were by Gilgal and said, now, he delivered the present, those with him, but when he started back, he left the delegation that came back with him, and he pretended he had a secret errand unto the king, and he did, by the way. It's quite a secret. I have a secret errand unto thee, O king, who said, keep silence, and all that stood by him went out from him. He said, I have a very secret message for you. And the king thought he was going to hear something, you know, that really was secret. And he sent everybody out. And Ehud came unto him, and he was sitting in a summer parlor, which he had for himself alone. And Ehud said, I have a message from God unto thee. And he arose out of his seat, and Ehud put forth his left hand and took the dagger from his right thigh and thrust it into his belly, and the haft also went in after the blade, and the fat closed upon the blade, so that he could not draw the dagger out of his belly, and the dirt came out. Now, friends, here's just about as bloody a thing as you can look at, and it's not a very pretty thing. These are the days of the judges, and this man now, a left-handed man, went in with a secret. What do? Why, they search him. You know, the Secret Service of that day, they went down his left side, and there wasn't any dagger there, but he had it on the other side. And so he took it out at the convenient moment, and he plunged it into this big fat man. And what happened? Why, the dagger was just covered by the fat of the man, you see. And, well, he stuck him, friends, like you would a pig. It wasn't a cowardly act. It took courage to do what he did, and he did it almost by chance, because it would have been very difficult for a right-handed man to have got in there and have done this, you see. But you wouldn't quite call this the heroic way of doing it, would you? I'm sure that we'd think of another way. Well, notice what you have here. Then Ehud went forth through the porch, shut the doors of the parlor upon him, and locked them. When he was gone out, his servants came. That is, the servants of the king here came, and they waited around. They didn't want to go in without the king calling them. And when they saw that, behold, the doors of the parlor were locked, they said, surely he covereth his feet in his summer chamber. In other words, he's taking a nap. Doesn't want us to disturb him. And they tarried till they were ashamed. They just kept thinking he'd wake up, and he didn't. And they waited until it was really embarrassing. And what happened? Well, they finally took a key, they opened them, and behold, their Lord was fallen down dead on the earth. And Ehud escaped while they tarried and passed beyond the quarters and escaped into Sarath. Now, while all this time was going on, it gave Ehud an opportunity to escape and get beyond the land of Moab where they could reach him. And in verse 27, it came to pass when he was come that he blew a trumpet in the mountain of Ephraim. And the children of Israel went down with him from the mount, and he before them. And he said unto them, fall after me, for the Lord hath delivered your enemies, the Moabites, into your hand. And they went down after him, took the fords of Jordan toward Moab, and suffered not a man to pass over. And they slew of Moab at that time about 10,000 men, all lust and all men of valor. And there escaped not a man. So Moab was subdued that day under the hand of Israel, and the land had rest 80 years. Now Ehud was the judge God raised up, and he had very little ability. In fact, I can't find anything he did other than this. He just happened to be left-handed and gave him a marvelous opportunity to get rid of the man that was bringing all of the tragedy into the lives of the Israelites. And he was the instrument God used. Now, I know that a great many people say, well, that was a bloody thing that he did. Sure wasn't romantic and wasn't heroic in any way whatsoever. But it accomplished the purpose. And God oftentimes uses this method to cut out a cancer of sin to save the body of the people. The thing is that it saved, probably because of this, thousands of lives. Now, a great many people are going to say, well, our civilization would not permit this. You couldn't say that because of the fact we dropped an atom bomb, you will recall, killed women and children. That is something that has apparently happened in South Vietnam. War is an awful, terrible thing. And the thing is, it delivered Israel, and it saved the lives of multitudes. But the supreme accomplishment was the fact that the only talent the man had, he's left-handed. He was a southpaw. Now, isn't that unusual? You remember William Carey was a cobbler. Dwight L. Moody had no formal education. Some folk down in Orange County let me have a cassette tape of the voice of Dwight L. Moody from a record that they had. He had a wonderful voice. I'd never realized that before, and I've seen pictures of him, and I never would associate the voice with the man. But he had no really formal education, yet he certainly sounded like he did. And you see all these J.C. Penney stores. Did you know he was the son of a preacher? And when his father died, the church in that day didn't provide a pension for the preacher's widow. And this boy, J.C. Penney, he went out and gathered up washing, and his mother took in washing. And he used to say when he did it, "Someday I'm going to grow up, and when I do, I'm going to make money, and I'll take care of my mother, and I'm going to take care of poor preachers and poor preachers' widows." Well, there's a place down in Florida named for Penney, and only retired preachers and widows of preachers can live there. He carried through what he said he was going to do. I may end up down a place like that, I don't know. And Dr. G. Campbell Morgan, when he preached his first sermon at a church, the committee met and turned him down. They told him they didn't think he could ever become a preacher. I'd sure hated to have been on that committee. And I used to hunt on the Brazos River with a rancher, a man who had made money in oil. And he told me how, as a young fella, he'd gone out and taken this claim way out in West Texas. He said nobody would have had that land. It was so bad and the weather so rough, he had to move his wife and daughter and son into town. And then he'd sleep at night on a saddle blanket and a slicker over him and just make a trench around him, let the water run off. My friend, may I say that he told me this. He says, "People think that I was lucky to hit oil on that land. But," he said, "I prayed that if God would only some way enable me to keep it and enable me to make money, I'd use it for him." That man, a great many people did think he was lucky and he had the oil money. But did you know he started a fund that just supported quite a few missionaries down in South America? You know, God can use you if you want to be used, friends. You can bake a cake. Or maybe you're just left-handed today. God can use you. Then we have another judge here that concludes this chapter, Shamgar. And you notice only one verse about him. It says, "After him was Shamgar, the son of Anath, which slew of the Philistines 600 men with an ox goad, and he also delivered Israel." Now, it's not the man here, but the method that he used. He used an ox goad, and that's a pretty crude instrument. And the reason he did, they just didn't have iron weapons among the Israelites. And he was short of any polished kind of an instrument or the latest thing for delivering his people. So he just used that which he had was an ox goad. He knew how to use it. That, you know, which goaded the oxen along. But he certainly knew how to use it. And I hear today people say, "Oh, you know, we must use the best methods." Well, I agree with that. That's fine to have good methods. But friends, what about the message? You know, it's wonderful to have airplanes today for missionaries. I've always thought that is fine. I've been for it. But when the missionary gets to the field or where the airplane takes him, is he giving out the word of God? That's what I want to know. You know, you can call today long distance between Maine and Texas. But what about the message that goes over the line? Television is a wonderful thing, but notice how it's prostituted today. And what about radio, by the way? I think it's a great thing. And jet planes are wonderful, but are they carrying messengers for God? And are they giving the message? You know, an ox goad can be dedicated to God if it's in the right hands. Remember that God used the jawbone of an ass. He used the rod of Moses. He used the slingshot of David. And all Dorcas had was a needle and thimble. And there was a little boy that only had 5 loaves and a few fishes. And James and John, they had some fishing nets. And Simon Peter had a boat. But there's all put in the hands of God. And friends, what you got, if you put it in his hands, he'll use it. I think of these three men that are mentioned in this chapter as three little men plus God. And this encourages me, if God used men like this, he may be able to use you and me.